Good afternoon. It is good to be with you again this lovely Sunday. It is most difficult for people to understand that life has no purpose. Life has no purpose whatsoever. This is a blow to the ego. We think we're so important. We go through life having various experiences. We believe it's getting us somewhere. Yet life is totally meaningless. No purpose at all. A good example of this is the dream. When you are dreaming, it appears that you have a purpose. You're doing all sorts of things in your dream. Yet you wake up and all of the things you've done in the dream. You've gone to school in the dream. You've earned a PhD. You've gotten married. You have children. You became a grandfather, grandmother. Then you awaken. It's all gone. And so it is with this life. We take it seriously. We're so concerned about our bodies, our affairs. Yet one day we will all awaken. And we will laugh. For we are not the world, nor the body, nor the mind. We have absolutely nothing to do with these things. It reminds me of the story of the two seekers who wanted to visit a great sage who lives across the river. It was a rainy day. Hurricane winds were blowing. And they wondered if they should go across the river. They may drown. It's bad weather. But they decided to go, for it was more important to see the sage than to take care of their lives. They tried to find a ferryman to take them across the river. But the ferryman wouldn't go. They found another ferryman. He wouldn't go. The weather was just too bad. They finally found the ferryman and said, "Since you're going to see the sage, I will take you across. But remember, your life is at risk. There are gale winds blowing, high waves. Do you still want to go?" They said, "Yes." They got in the boat and the ferryman was rowing. The boat was going up and down the waves. The water was getting into the boat. The ferryman asked, "Should I turn around?" They said, "No, keep going." They finally got to the shore. And they saw a band of pilgrims coming from the sage's place. They asked the pilgrims, "Which way is the sage? Where can we get the darshan of the sage?" And they looked at the seekers and they said, "You fools. The ferryman who took you across was the sage." They looked for the ferryman and he was gone, he disappeared. What is the purpose of this story? It has no purpose whatsoever. Why am I telling you this story? To pass the time. There's absolutely no reason to tell you this story. That's the way life is. We become serious, we get involved in religions, we get involved with sages, books, as if these things are going to help us. They appear to help us, just as the world appears to be real. But nothing in this world can really do anything for you. For you and the world do not exist. You are pure awareness. There is no thing you have to do to see this, to find this. You are that. The world can do nothing to you unless you react to it and you allow it to. There is absolutely nothing anywhere that has anything to do with you. Who do you think you are? You think you're somebody important? You have a good job? You have a family? You pay your taxes? I think you pay your taxes. All these things you are doing, why are you doing these things? You don't know. You were born in a certain family. You were totally brainwashed. And now look at you. You think you're somebody. But you're a nobody. There's nobody. Why do you want to be somebody? You want to be somebody because you believe it will bring you happiness and peace and love, joy. You want to fulfill your life. Do you not do this in the dream? You do the same thing in your dreams. Yet you awaken. And you find yourself in this dream. You all look so peaceful. Why do you want to look peaceful? Peace is a delusion. Birth is an illusion. Death is an illusion. You are an illusion. You are not what you believe you are. Even if you feel you're spiritual, who is there that has to believe they're spiritual? Who is the person who believes they are something, whatever it may be? Whether you're searching, whether you're practicing certain meditations, whatever you're doing, there has to be somebody to do these things. I am saying, find out who this somebody is. Who is this somebody who has to go through various yogas, meditations, read various books, get involved in various organizations? Who has to do this? Find out. Find out who that person is. Where did that person come from? Who gave that being birth? Who feels he is the doer? Investigate yourself. Dive deep within yourself. See who you really are. And then see if there's a purpose for your life. The only justification we give to our lives is we believe we're making it a better place for our children, a better place for humanity. But if you look through history, you will see the dastardly things that have taken place on this earth. You see man's inhumanity to man. All of these things that have happened since the beginning of time. And we've always tried to bring peace into this world, harmony and joy. Nothing seems to work. Nothing seems to work because you're playing with a dream world. You're involved in a world that's a dream. Yet for some reason, you believe you're somebody. And you're doing things in this world as a so-called person. Yet in reality, you're not a person. This world does not exist. There is nothing in this world that is of importance. And you're wasting your life by running after the things that change. I I'm not saying you should give up your life and go live in a cave. Yeah, that's not such a bad idea. You really don't have to give up anything except your thoughts. It is your mind, the thoughts, that get you in trouble. You identify with your thoughts. You identify with your mind. Your mind creates all the pictures that you see in front of you. It creates this world that you observe and get involved in. The whole universe emanates from your mind. Everything. People, places, and things have come out of your mind. To awaken, find out where the mind came from. Where does the mind come from? The mind never existed, so it couldn't come from any place. There is no mind. If there is no mind, there are no thoughts. If there are no thoughts, there is no body. If there is no body, there are no others. If there are no others, there is no world, there is no universe. So you see, all these things have come from your mind. You have to question yourself, to whom comes this mind? Who thinks? Who is the doer? Who am I? Everything is nothing. Nothing is your true nature. Because you exist, others exist. When you cease to exist, others will cease to exist. There will be only one. That one is emptiness. freedom. That one is absolute reality. That one is you. Why do you wish to continue playing the games of this world and get involved in all sorts of things? Let go of the world. Let go of the pull of inertia that makes you believe that you are part of this world, that you are a human being, that you are an ego. That's all the game of life. It's sort of difficult to understand how you would function if you did these things that I outlined for you. Yet always remember that you will function without any help from yourself. You will continue to carry on doing the certain things you came here to do. You will be vibrantly happy due to the fact you're no longer the doer. There is no longer anyone who is responsible. The responsibility is on God's shoulders, so to speak. Not your shoulders. You haven't any shoulders. You no longer have to carry the world. You no longer believe that you're responsible for your condition. In New Age philosophy, they teach you that you're responsible for whatever happens to you. You cannot possibly be responsible for whatever happens to you because there's no you to begin with. There is no such entity as you who caused any problems or is responsible for anything in this world. Such a being does not exist. Yet when you believe in your mind that you are responsible for something, the picture your mind paints in this world is of you being responsible. Then you believe that you're a sinner. You believe you've done bad things in your life and you have to be punished. Or if you believe in New Age teachings, you believe you have invoked the law of cause and effect. Therefore, the cause will bring the effect invariably. So if you've done anything wrong in your life to somebody, the effect is going to return to you. In reality, in truth, there is no cause. There's just no cause. not going to be an effect. In other words, who created the cause? You can say, I did. You realize you've got to realize that the I that you think is the cause does not exist. And you begin to see where the I rose from, where the risen rises from, where the I came from, that thinks it's the cause. And you will find the I never existed. If your I never existed, there is no cause. If there's no cause, there's no effect. Consequently, you are free. You're free right now. You have absolutely nothing to be sorry for. This doesn't give you a license to go out and do anything you like. So if you're doing anything you like, you're going to fall in the pit, so to speak, and appear to suffer accordingly in this world. But this teaching makes you see that there is no cause for any action. Some people like to say that the first cause is God. Yet there is no first cause. God is part of the creation of the mind. Think of this. The thing that you have believed all these years to be hurting you, the sufferings you've had in your life, believing that you have caused problems for people, you have caused unhappiness, is a lie. You are free. You are Brahman. You are Satchitananda. Effortless, causeless, choiceless, pure awareness. You have no form and no shape. You have no existence. Yet you are. You are not this and not that. You just are. You are something, for want of a better word, that is so far beyond the mundane world and beyond your experiences that you can never discover this with your mind, or with your trying, or meditating, or whatever you do. You can never discover this reality, this absolute reality, which you are. this freedom, this total bliss, which is beyond bliss, which is beyond freedom. You are something so beautiful. There are no words to describe it. This is beyond God. Beyond everything you can ever imagine. There is no name for it. When I use the words absolute reality, choiceless pure awareness, Satchitananda, ultimate oneness, they're just words. It is in the silence when you feel it. When there is total silence. And you're not looking for a description. You're not trying to say, I feel happiness. I feel bliss. But when you say these words, you limit yourself. For you are saying, the I feels bliss, the I feels happiness. There is no I, therefore there is no bliss and there is no happiness. Yet there is something you will experience for yourself. It is no thing you can describe. It is nothing you can talk about. It is nothing you can discuss with anyone. It is not debatable. It is nothing you can prove. Yet you are that. You are that. It doesn't matter what appears to be going on in your life. It is because you are concerned with your miserable life that you do not experience the truth. The reality. You are concerned with your affairs, with people, with places, with things. This is what keeps you back from experiencing this higher reality that I'm speaking of. Trying to get your point across, trying to win a battle, trying to come out on top. This is what keeps you back from experiencing this reality. If you really want to awaken, you must put this first in your life. How do you put this first in your life? By learning to be calm and peaceful under all conditions. By observing everything in your life and leaving it alone. By allowing people to live their own lives and not judging or condemning. By beginning to see that the person that you dislike, the condition you do not like, is only yourself. Whatever transpires is yourself. There's only yourself. If you realize there's only yourself, whatever you do for others or to others, you're doing it to yourself. Begin to work this way. Understand the oneself. And you will go beyond it. You will go beyond nirvana. Beyond God. Beyond anything you can ever imagine. When you think about these things, you spoil it. Again, do not think or believe this is too far out. You've got your life to live and you've got things to do. Or feel as if you are doing the best you can and you've got responsibilities. Remember, your body will appear to go through the processes. Your body will appear to do the things it came here to do. You will continue on your track wherever you're going, whatever you're doing. Yet you will not be you. How can you be two different people, two different entities? To others, you will appear to be a person. To others, you will appear to be doing work. But the paradox about this is you will not be doing anything. you do absolutely nothing. You're not doing a thing. You are totally free and liberated. Yet as others look at you, you will appear to have a body. You will appear as they are. For you can only see yourself. In other words, where you're coming from in consciousness, that's what you see. If you believe you're a body, you're a mind, if you believe in the things of this world, then you see them everywhere you look. You see other bodies. If you believe in suffering, you will see other people suffer. If you believe in crime, you will see crime wherever you look. Whatever you believe in your mind, you are creating in your life. But as you go beyond the mind, where there's absolutely nothing going on, you will be in a place that cannot be described. Yet when others look at you, you will appear to be working, doing the things you do. You have to ask yourself, is it worth finding yourself by giving everything up? Look at your life, look at your world, look at what's going on in this world, look at the universe, what's happening. And see what part you play. Where do you belong in the scheme of things? If you believe in your human head, you will go through trials and errors, fighting for survival, trying to make things happen. But as you begin to let go, as you begin to go deep within yourself, as you begin to leave the world alone, mentally, you will find that you're becoming happier and happier. You're becoming peaceful, joyous, free. And one day, this whole universe will be gone. It will have disappeared. And the self will exist. You are that. Awaken and be free. the holiday season, I asked many of you if you would to bring toys for the children in the orphanage, and some of you responded. I have certificates of acknowledgement for those of you who did respond. The only two people I see here today are Dave, Fred, Jay. Tony Leitner did also, but he's not here. Did you? Oh, right. That's right. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Who? Yeah. Good. Okay. These are the certificates of acknowledgement. Like the Wizard of Oz. You get your certificate. Pass this back to Tony. Guess it's the Pam back of you. And we have one more for Tony Lightning. Shade them.
Why? What
am
I gonna do?
Hang on the wall.
I'll give it to Tony.
Put it in your hot chest.
No, I've got one for Tony. Now it's time to play Stump the Guru. So I'll pass the questions.
You can get Oh, there's a check, I think. No, it isn't. Sorry.
How's it coming? And these two old fellows are sitting on the park bench, and one says, "You ever wonder if maybe life is just an illusion and nothing really exists?" And the other man says, "If that's true, then I'm definitely paying way too much rent."
Too much rent.
How can you distinguish an authentic Yanni from a phony? Just look in the mirror, and whatever you see, that's what you see in the Yanni. If you think highly of yourself, you will see the true Yanni. If you think that you're phony or there's something wrong with you, you will see that in the Yanni also. So by knowing yourself, you know the Yanni. Because there's only one Yanni, and that's you. You are never in the wrong place. If you are with a teacher who appears to be sort of phony, that's what you deserve at this time. That's where you should be. There are no mistakes. Nothing is wrong. All is well. So if you want to find out who's true and who's false, look in the mirror. Is fish as domestic as meat? How about seafood? How about sattvic food is always the best food to eat. If you eat whole grains, fruits and vegetables, that should do it for you. You don't need anything else but that. On the other hand, does it really matter? if you understand the truth about yourself, if you have an idea who you are, you will refine your diet automatically. There is really no high stage. I mean, the top stages in the world that have really eaten meat. It's not necessary. Do not stop eating meat because I say so. But rather see who you are. Find out the reason why you like to eat meat. What it does for you. You become a graveyard for animals. As far as fish is concerned, people say they're cold-blooded so we can eat the fish. It doesn't matter. It depends on you. It depends how you see this. Again, the safest diet is whole grains, fruits, and vegetables. The rest is up to you. You can't generally say what people should eat and say, eat this and don't eat this. Everyone is different. If you're living in the North Pole, you have to eat whale blubber. I know there's some people living in the Caribbean Islands who eat whale blubber. Usually these people look like blubber themselves. But take a look at your own life. See the things you eat. And why you eat these things, why you need to eat these things. Find out where you're coming from. Find out who you are. Find the truth about yourself. And then you'll know what to eat personally. Have there been analytical cases of a person reaching the state of consciousness that you are in by using the self-inquiry method? Definitely. There have been quite a few people who have reached self-realization and have awakened by practicing self-inquiry. When you practice self-inquiry, do not look at time. Do not think I have to reach it before I die. I have to reach it by 2 o'clock this afternoon. I'll be late for lunch. Just do it without any motive. Practice self-inquiry without thinking anything is going to happen. Let it become part of your life, part of your nature. As you continue to do this, one day something will give. It has to. One day you will find that you're home free. Forget about time. Forget about age. Forget about everything. Just do the self-inquiry. Persevere. Something has to give. Robin, how are the doctors? Whatever this word is. To where you reside who practice collation therapy. Okay, the doctors. here are the doctrines from Practice of Galatians 7. Somebody gave me the name of some doctors of Practice of Galatians 7.
Don't worry. That's it.
I got a question as usual. Simple. Still, I and some other people, I'll speak for myself, don't understand this illusion. You don't exist, do you mean physically or emotionally when you say that nothing exists? Life is an illusion.
You appear to exist in a dream, don't you?
Well,
when you're dreaming.
I'm not talking about dreaming, I'm talking about right now.
Well, imagine this is a dream, what we're doing right now. We're sitting like this, asking questions, and you're asking me the same question. And I tell you, Nate, you're dreaming your life. It does not really exist. And you're telling me, I'm talking right now. You're telling me the exact same thing in the dream. What are you doing right now? Did you tell me in the dream? And I tell you, all I can say is find out for yourself. When you find out for yourself, there'll be no question about it in your mind. You've got to find out. And you tell me, how can I believe this? How can I accept something like this? It sounds so ridiculous. And then you wake up. It's the exact same thing. So-called life never really existed. It doesn't exist at all.
About the physical reality.
What physical reality? That's life. The physical reality, the mental reality, the emotional reality, it's all part of the mortal dream.
But it actually exists. That microphone stand is solid, the chair you're sitting on is soft and solid.
It's a dream chair, it's a dream microphone. Just like when you were dreaming, you're dreaming of the microphone in the chair. You say it's solid then too. I come and tell you, Nate, you're dreaming. I come into your dream, and you reject it. You say the microphone is solid, the chair is solid, because it's a dream microphone and a dream chair. Therefore, you think it's solid. It appears solid. When you wake up, what happened to the solidity?
It's still solid.
Of course it's solid, but so is everything in your dream.
In a dream, it's a dream, but this isn't a dream.
But while you're dreaming, you believe it's another dream also. You believe it's reality. That's the point. When you're dreaming in a dream, you're reacting, aren't you? You think it's all real.
In the dream, I can follow you completely. And I can see that this could be a dream also. But the physical reality is that some of us are younger, some are older. My hand is soft, it's flesh. I could cut it with a knife. That chair is different color.
Don't you do the same thing in the dream?
In the dream, yes, but not in...
But while you're dreaming, you believe it's real. And you will not say it's a dream.
But it could actually happen now, what I'm saying.
What can happen?
I'm doing this.
You do that in the dream also.
But I wouldn't step in front of a car. Or maybe I'd step in front of a car in a dream, but the dream would wake up. But if I step in front of a car in reality today...
Then you'll wake up.
That would work.
Don't get away from the question.
You're getting away from the question.
Okay, I'll just drop it. The rest of the guys think it's a joke.
No, but look at it like this. Look at it. When did you have your last dream?
Probably last night.
Do you remember what you dreamt? You forgot. Yet in that dream, perhaps you were a king of a great country. And you had a duel with a sword with somebody and they stabbed you in the shoulder. And you bled. And you hurt. And then the doctors came and bandaged his shoulder.
Let me answer it like this, what somebody told me about a dream. I don't know how true it is. Some man said he was a dream and he had four daughters and they all got killed. And in real life, so-called, he had two daughters and they got killed. And he didn't show any remorse. So somebody said, well, what is the matter with you? You don't show any remorse for your two daughters? He said, in my dream, four of my daughters were killed and I didn't show any remorse. Why should I show remorse for the two daughters that died in this actual life?
No, the story goes that the daughters who were killed, they ask him and he says, for whom shall I mourn? The daughters that were killed in the dream,
okay,
or my daughters that were killed now? So you answered your own question.
Because he's saying, Nate, that this is also a dream which you will awaken.
I realize that. I see that the awakening part, then there will be an awakening. I don't know how else to put the awakening will be. But in the meantime, I'm aging. My feet are sore. They could be sore in the dream, and they're sore now.
But they're sore now in the dream.
You go through a dream, you're born, you go to school, you grow up, you get married, you work, you have sore feet, sore head. Everything is sick in your body. And the whole lifespan takes an hour, 5 minutes.
In the dream.
In the dream, you wake up.
But in this reality, it takes 40, 50, 60, 70 years.
That's how it appears. But in the dream, it appeared the same thing. You didn't know it takes a minute or 5 minutes or an hour to wake up.
No, okay.
Because you were a baby, you grew up, and you became Nate.
I'm missing something. I don't know.
You're not missing anything. The dream is like this. You dream.
You understand?
You go through life, you awaken. You go through this life, you awaken. There's no difference.
All I know is I feel that I'm all alone. All you guys are sitting there not saying a thing. It's if you all know the answers. If you do, speak up.
Nate, is your awareness sore? Or is your... Who's aware of the sore feet?
My mouth is sore. I had surgery on my gums.
Who's aware of the sore now?
I am.
Is awareness sore?
No, awareness is not sore.
What's that?
Just what is.
So be that. And that's not sore. See what happens. Robert, I had an interesting dream last night.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a new car. And I was driving around and a girl, a friend of mine, she wanted to drive it and I let her drive it. And she gets in and she drives away. And then all of a sudden I see the door open and she falls out and the car is still running. And then the car goes around the corner and she runs out to me and she says, the car ran over a man. And I said to myself, now I'm ruined. My life is ruined. How I wish this was a dream. But no, it's real. Here I am. It's real. How I wish it were a dream. It's real. And then I woke up. I remember that. You know? How I wish this was a dream. But no. The car ran over somebody. Here I am. It's real. And then I woke up.
That's a good story.
It really happened, too.
When did you go to jail?
When I woke up, I didn't even know I was up. Like, it took a long time. It was unbelievable. It was just absolutely identical to this life. Actually exactly the same thing.
Glad you woke up.
It was great. Yeah.
And now you're here. Going through this dream.
So then I had the cold. So I said, does awareness have a cold? Awareness is aware of the cold, but awareness doesn't get a cold. So am I going to be the cold? Am I going to be the mind being the cold? Am I going to be awareness who never had a cold?
Throw them out. Any more wise guys?
Yeah.
It's great.
You say, if I ask myself, where am I in the scheme of things, either I'm the center of the scheme of things, or there is no scheme of things. And the reality of the situation is there's no center and no scheme of things.
Correct.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad you agree. If you hadn't, I'd feel bad.
I'd
be confused.
You count on him.
I'm good for nothing.
Yeah. That's what makes you valuable.
We're interested in the centers and the scheme of things and realities and all kinds of things. Let go of all these thoughts. Do not think. The less you think, the more you know.
You say the less we think, the more we'll know?
Mm.
You were talking about no causes, and it's paradoxical that in self-inquiry we're looking for the source of the I, the cause of the I.
We're not really looking for the cause of the I. We're looking from where the I has arisen. Where did the I come from? How did it arise? We're not saying there's a cause. We're just trying to think in our minds, where did the I come from? How did it originate?
Well, source, I would, to me, is a synonym for cause.
You can say that to an extent, so.
You know, because there's source, and then there's, you know, what arises from the source.
Do not try to make our minds believe, though, that there's a real cause, because that would be a hindrance. For the I doesn't exist.
Yeah.
We find out that the I had no cause whatsoever.
Right, so that it was a little confusing when you were speaking about the causeless. Because also self-inquiry is a process of discovery. I mean, I have to take what you're saying as a map and not as the final answer. I have to find my own final answer. Otherwise, I am choosing to believe something which is not from my own experience.
Mm.
So I listen to what you say, but for me, the self-inquiry is the process of discovery of what's true. If that makes sense. I mean, if I ultimately find that there's no cause, but till that time, there has to be only an idea, just like the idea that there is a cause. They're just ideas. And the experience itself is the discovery is what self-inquiry is about.
Do not get hung up on that. Practice self-inquiry. But do it in a peaceful, joyous understanding. Do not be too serious about it. Do not say, this is a cause and I have to get to the cause and I have to find it. It's the only way I'll ever awaken. Just do self-inquiry in an easy way. Let it happen by itself.
I find in my own experience that happens occasionally, but at times self-inquiry is requires a great, demands work, a lot of effort, because I am interested in doing it, but sometimes my mind, because of its conditioning, would rather solve a problem or, you know, digress in many other directions. So when I, there are moments when I can do self-inquiry when my mind is very concentrated, and it just happens very spontaneously or very easily. But there, a lot of the times, you know, I have, you know, I'm tired and I'd rather, you know, think about something else, or I have to solve a problem, or that's how, at least how I feel. And so I have to, it's effort.
In the beginning, it's true.
Yeah.
But as you carry on with it, when you have to solve a problem, it will come automatically. Who has to solve this problem?
Right. No, that's, it happens, but I'm saying in the beginning it's work to get my mind away from the habit of wanting to solve a problem rather than looking at a bigger picture, if that makes sense.
And yes, it does. It appears as work.
Right.
But try to understand that it's not really work.
No, I understand that only at moments.
Because the person who does the work who's practicing self-inquiry doesn't exist.
Right.
In the same way, I think when you, whether you're looking for the source or the cause, when you discover that there is no I, then there would, of necessity, have been no source or cause.
Of course. Right. The point is, do not put too much emphasis on a cause, saying, I have to find the cause of the I. What you're really doing when you do that is you are imagining that there's an I that exists and you have to find its cause. Whereas it's a question, from whence does the I come? You're just wondering about it.
So sort of rhetorical, right?
It's sort of rhetorical, yes. You're wondering about where does the I come from? Where is the source of the I?
But also, a cause implies motion, a cause moving into an effect, whereas the word source does not have to imply motion. It could be a motionless source.
How about applesauce?
Spaghetti sauce. No, I mean, the source has no, there could be, there's no motion. There is a difference.
You can say that, yes.
Well, isn't self-inquiry a process of discovery? I mean, when we go into self-inquiry, we can assume that everything you're saying is correct, believe in what you're saying, or we can disbelieve everything you're saying and find out for ourselves. And it seems to me, if you try to set up self-inquiry in a way where, okay, I know the ego's, the I is unreal, then it's not a pure question anymore. It's a biased question. I know that it's unreal, and so I'm just asking myself a question that I already know the answer to. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, but you keep it in the back of your mind.
So there's no freshness to the question. It's just, I know the answer, and I'm just, it becomes like a more like a mantra or something that's dead.
And if you have it in the back of your mind, either there is no source, there's no I, and you keep asking anyway, but you feel someplace in the back of your mind that it doesn't really exist, it'll happen faster.
Perhaps for most of us, that place in the back of the mind is not a very big place. Like you said, the real question is we really are confused about this I business, and it's a real genuine question. I can sympathize with what he's saying. It sounds sometimes like you say, well, we've got the whole problem solved, but now let's just go ahead and play it out, even though we know there's no real I. In fact, there are a lot of voices around here that sort of think there are real I suspect.
You have to work with that.
But what he's saying
is... You have to inquire, for whom comes the I? For whom is the I? But you have to have a little understanding in the back of your mind that there is no I that really exists.
Right, but that may be damn little for many of these voices on this.
Then keep asking. Keep inquiring.
Also, going back to what you were saying about the idea of doing it rather lightly, or perhaps, what word did you use, playfully or gently, or self-inquiry? I can't remember exactly what adverb you used, but would that, and could you kind of, would a way to talk about that be as follows? For example, occasionally self-inquiry, perhaps,
for many of us seems to go well. You know, some everything feels good, there's peace and stuff, and you're really in fat sitting, and you're just sitting there and everything's working. Many times it doesn't seem to work exactly like that. But perhaps there's a tendency for the mind to want to try to force it to feel like that or to be like that. Is what you're saying perhaps just ask, whom does this come? And if the mind goes chattering off and all that, don't worry about trying to force it into that.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. When that happens, you watch the mind, you become the observer, and you leave it alone. When self-inquiry becomes a burden to you, when you feel you're spinning your wheels, then just watch yourself.
Or can you not also sort of just do self-inquiry, even though it's not working well, doing it without worrying about the fact that it doesn't seem to be, quote, working well in the sense that it doesn't seem to be giving you a lot of peace, and don't you still just sort of do it without worrying about the fact that you don't like the result?
You can do it, but it will not be as effective. It's only effective when you do it without having any tension. There's no tension in your mind, in your body. You're simply inquiring, to whom does the eye come? What is its source? And you wait. If you feel upset, if you feel it's a waste of time, then observe yourself, watch yourself. Find out who feels this way. Ask, to whom does this tension come? Who feels uptight? Who feels it as if they're spinning their wheels?
That is self-inquiry.
It's self-inquiry.
That's just the step below what is the source. The two steps.
You're getting to every problem that comes into your mind. And it is to attack every problem, but to realize someplace in the back of your mind that there are no problems. You can do both at the same time. You can be attacking the problem, inquiring about the problem, to whom does it come? Then something will say, there are no problems, and you'll start laughing. There's nothing to attack. But if you take it too seriously, then you're bringing it to life. You're making it a reality. You're making it a part of the relative world, as if it really exists. And it's a fight you've got in your hands.
In the mountain pass, there's a piece called the answer is in the question. In fact, to expect an answer in the question. Or intellectual.
The answer is in the question, so.
Because that, it seems to me, because you know, I hit stages of doubt at times. It seems like the doubt is the greatest enemy, because what you're talking about is almost hopeless. When you hit some heavy-duty doubt, when you really want to know, and then you're saying, well, we have to take all this as faith, that what you're saying is correct, then I'm stuck. I can't go beyond it, because when the doubt comes up, I don't want to believe anybody or anything or anything. I just want to know what is true. And I can't buy that the eye is not real at that time, because it just seems too real. And then it's exactly what you're talking about. It's a fight. The fight goes on between who's right, who's wrong, who's leading me down. You know. It's. I think that if truth comes, it has to be self-evident, has to be obvious, and there can be no trace that someone told me the way it was, and I bought into that. You know, because it seems that that's a changeable. You know, if you change your mind tomorrow, then I'm screwed, you know what I mean? So suddenly out of the blue, you said, oh, well, all I've said all these years were all bullshit, you know, and the fact is that, you know, I was wrong, you know, and hell, you guys are just idiots, you know, for following me. You know, where are we, you know? We're up the creek without a paddle, you know?
This is why I say so many times, you're probably not here these times, do not believe a word I say.
Yeah, but you're saying do believe now. Do believe this I isn't real. Do believe, have in the back of your mind, this is not real. This is all an illusion. This is a dream. This is blah, this is that, you know?
This is my confession.
Yeah, that's from your experience. But I'm saying at times I really am into that because I have faith in you. And then but the mind has this way of creating this enormous doubt.
Of course it does.
And then I'm just sitting there going, I don't know, who's right, who's wrong, you know, and the mind is devious, you know, and it seems like the mind can whoop me every time, you know, until I, you know, resolve it somehow. And the answer, what I'm saying is your answer is not satisfying me because it seems predicated upon faith again in you. Because, and the mind has a vicious doubt, you know, that comes up, you know, because I guess it tries to hold on to the last degree. I don't know if other people can relate to what I'm saying or not.
Many can, of course.
So
it happens to everybody. What you should do when that happens is to keep still.
What happens
just
is...
Just watch your thoughts, keep still.
What happens is I go still, okay, I've tried that, I go still, I observe. And then what happens is when I'm in observation, my mind even gets more active, and then I end up going down some other garden path, and then, you know, it's a while before I even think of self-inquiry again. You understand? It's just this vicious kind of mind that I'm dealing with here, you know?
I understand perfectly. But try to say to yourself, I don't care what my mind is doing. Mm-hmm. Let my mind go whatever direction it wants. In other words, flow with it. Do not try to stop it. Because it will overwhelm you.
That's what it does. It can't support me.
Because you're trying to fight it. Do not try to fight it. Just say, okay, go ahead. Do what you want.
Yeah, it does.
Go where you want.
Yeah, and then days later I come back to self-inquiry.
And just watch and let it go. But if you're doing exactly what I tell you now, let the mind go whatever direction it goes. But become the observer of the thoughts. Just watch where you're going. Watch your thoughts deluding you. Watch them pushing you away. Observe them thoroughly. But do not get excited, do not get mad at your thoughts. Do not get mad at yourself, do not get upset about it. Just say, it's okay to do that, mind. You can do whatever you like. It's okay. Just by observing that, the mind will become weaker. It will not have the strength to continue fighting you.
Well, then I build up this heavy-duty ego observer, you know? I mean, well, my understanding of the observer is the observer is like the place where the ego hides, and the last hiding place of the ego. So you're asking me to jump into another part of my ego and watch this part of the ego. Does that make sense?
Forget about jumping into another part of your ego.
Because the observer is the ego.
But the observer is the less ego.
Oh.
It's not a complete ego. It's a very subtle part of the ego.
Right.
It's the last part of the ego that's destroyed. So as you watch it this way and you observe it this way, the mind becomes weaker and weaker. And the ego will destroy itself.
I relate to everything that Jonas is saying, and I also feel sometimes the self-inquiry keeps the mind busier than, say, a mantra. But I think the answer to our having faith in you, you have already covered by saying find out for yourself. To find out for ourselves is not different from having faith. And you always do suggest that. But the only way we really know is not believing you, but knowing on our own.
Of course.
How about surrender, Robert? Can you work the two together?
Surrender is very good. Surrender is just letting go completely of the struggle. Letting go of the mind, whatever it's doing, whatever it's saying, whatever it's telling you. Giving it all to God, so to speak. Releasing yourself. Not allowing the mind to do anything to hurt you. Whatever it does. You surrender it by saying that mind but thine.
So in other words, are you saying, for example, if our mind gets really busy and then we sort of catch ourselves being busy-minded, that we could say, God, take this busyness from me, or
you can definitely
I surrender this busyness to
you
God.
Can say, I have no mind of my own, I have no thoughts of my own, I have no body of my own. It's all yours.
Which we could also do to the guru, the
yes. Of God and the Son. So I know one time you said something about give your thoughts to me. That would be surrender also. It would be just when you find yourself so busy, I sometimes say, Robert, take these thoughts from me. And I imagine that you've taken them. They're not my problem anymore.
You let go. You surrender. You give them up. That's a good method.
Good practice. You really want all that garbage?
It doesn't affect him. That's the point.
It doesn't exist.
Well, so then you don't receive it.
It goes through me.
Doesn't even do that if it doesn't exist. Who's the you it goes through?
The you that you think appears true.
No, that's probably good.
You believe that I'm taking your stuff from you.
The person, the person
wouldn't dream of doing that.
But when you give it up, you feel better, and I feel better.
I don't involve you at all, so no need to.
If you like to, you can surrender this stuff.
I wouldn't do you a dirty trick like that.
But it wouldn't affect him.
No, he says it wouldn't, but it might.
No.
I wouldn't want to snow you, Robert.
He tells me in radio he just chooses up and sticks him out. It has no meaning. It's not going to...
No wonder he's so fat. Affect him.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can use any method you like.
Yeah.
But not be disturbed about the mind or the ego or what appears to come to you. Be still. Be quiet.
I have issues about that, about just being quiet, because there are lots of people that go up on the mountaintop and they're real quiet for 20 years, and they come down and they get pissed off, and it's all over, you know. So quietness, really, the hell with it, you know. So you keep the samskaras quiet for a little while, you know, and then, you know, then they get a little aggressive when you get involved again. So it just doesn't seem that. Quietness is the answer. Quietness maybe is a symptom of either two things, either a pacification of the samskaras, and that is that you just retreat from the world, and then nobody bothers you, and you're happy for your whole life, you know, or you've earned $3 million in lotto, and you get a nice place, and you're all set, you know. And the second way is that you really burn off those samskaras. And then if you no matter if you live in hell and you feel happy, you know. And it seems, because there are a lot of people that in India, I noticed that, you know, are into the observer, you know. And one guy, he spent 7 years at a Theravada monastery, and he did a lot of self-observation. And then he noticed when he got back that everybody aggravated him, you know. So he said, to hell with all that silence and observing the self. Let's do some therapy. Let's get in there and clean out the old garbage pit, you know. And so that was his way of resolving it. But it just seems that the silence isn't enough. It may be, okay, we pacified those little samskaras for a while. But hell, you know, how do we know they've really burned? I can understand that the idea that the grace that you're transmitting is burning some scars, like you say, do the silence at certain times of the day, you know. But I don't think that necessarily silence is the answer for liberation. It could be pacification, and often is, you know.
That's a good point. But what I'm getting at when I say being in silence, yeah. I don't mean to go away to a cave or to a mountaintop or to hide from your work.
Yeah.
Being in silence where you are. Being silenced by not reacting. This is what I'm referring to.
Yeah, but like TMers, one of my friends used to say about TMers, you know, they go in like a bastard, they're like a saint for 20 minutes, and they come out like a bastard. You know? So, you know, I've been a bastard a lot in my life, and, you know, I want to be a little different, you know? So it just doesn't seem like I can understand self-inquiry if maybe we can find the source, you know, something beyond the personal I, that just that discovery there will just awaken us. But I think that pure silence sometimes when you speak seems to just be a pacification of the ego, you know?
Not really. The silence I'm speaking of is the mind becomes weaker and weaker until it dies. And you do this by looking at the world, the vicissitudes of the world that you're in, the problems you go through, watching them, not reacting, keeping your mind from reacting. That's quieting your mind. That's the silence I'm talking about. So you can be in your job, you can be anywhere. You notice the things that used to bother you and annoy you. No longer have the power to do that because you're not reacting, you're not accepting it. And your mind has become quiet while it's active. So this is quietness and activity. Things are happening all around you, you're not hiding from it. You're not trying not to think about anything, you're just not reacting. When you do not react, the mind becomes still. The mind quiets. As it becomes quiet this way, it weakens. And you eventually get rid of it. So that's the silence I'm talking about.
But why doesn't it work for all those billions of people in the world over many centuries who have, you know, had years and years of quiet meditation time, you know, whether they're Buddhist or Hindu or Christian or Vedic or whatever, you know, who are just bastards, you know, after all these years. I saw a whole 1,000 Buddhists at a, you know, spent years and they're, you know, at a ceremony and they were pushing and shoving, you know, just as hard as anything.